We'll start now. So here is the, we're learning different medical tshuvos, medical response by Rav Asher Weiss, different situations. So today, this is another situation in his book. So this is in a book that has a list of his tshuvos. So I'll give you the introduction. It's not in the source sheet. Here's the introduction. A 17-year-old boy had ventricular fibrillation in his heart. There was a concern that he had an irregular heartbeat that could be dangerous, and there was concern over the possibility of sudden cardiac arrest. The doctors implanted a defibrillator in the young man in case the heart stopped suddenly. According to the doctors, if someone has this situation, there's nearly a 50% chance that siblings carry the same gene, and they may be affected by this disorder. And it's generally accepted that if one member of the family tests for the gene, then the other members of the family are also tested for the gene. And the doctors also advise that first cousins should also be notified, for there is a 10% chance that they too will carry this gene. The father did not want to notify members of the wider family. Why? Because if this is made public, then it might cause difficulty in finding a suitable match for the children, and they'd rather avoid testing their own children for the same reason. So he thinks that there is no need to disclose if the sibling has this condition, only if the person himself has the conditions. Maybe you shouldn't test. So there are two different questions. There's a question from the father, and there's a question from the doctor, right? In other words, the question from the father is, must the father test the rest of his children, and must he inform the cousins? And there's also a question from the doctor. If the father does not inform the relatives, must the doctor notify the cousins? He can just violate the prohibition.
Right.
It's like, he can. Is he obligated? Are you obligated to violate your oath to do this if you believe it will potentially save a life? So how would we look at this question, right? First we'll do it from a parent standpoint, then we'll do it from a doctor's standpoint. Yeah? Right. Right. So the question is, if I have a situation of potential pikuach nefesh, then I have to, I could violate Shabbos rather, to save my life. The question is, what responsibility do I have to cause harm to myself, whatever that harm is, in order to save someone else's life? And what's considered pikuach nefesh for those purposes? In other words, right, they're two different questions. There's to the sibling, where there's a 50% chance, that's pretty serious, I'm not saying, versus do I have to notify the cousins? Do I have to put myself in harm's way, potentially, if people find out about this? Is it gonna harm my family shidduch possibility? Do I have to be concerned for a 10% chance? What if it's a 5% chance? What if it's a 2%, right? In other words, pikuach nefesh is very serious. The question is, when do I have to make an imposition of myself for some possibility for someone else, right? That's what we're trying to wear. What way would that point do? Should you disclose or not? I mean,
no, I always disclose.
Right. Right. Okay. Okay. So you're saying because the tests are more sophisticated, so therefore.
It's still not 100%.
Right.
Negative.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right. Right.
Okay. Let's say, not disclose medical information. I know people personally who failed to get that kids who had developmental disorders, and which earlier you get help.
So again, I would try to frame. I want to try to just frame the question here. In other words, I think many of us probably feel if there's a 50% chance of someone, you know, being in this dangerous situation, so then I would say our natural inclination is maybe to do something. If it's a 10% or 5% chance, you know, obviously, you know, Howie's case was a case where something is impacting this person. He should take care of it. It's going to hurt the marriage later on. What I want to focus specifically is my responsibility to inform someone about a slight possibility that may spook people out in terms of finding shit for the family, yeah?
Well, there may be an additional overlay. The assumption, I think,
right,
in the discussion so far,
right,
is that the person with this some degree,
right,
of a potential problem,
right,
definitely would want to know, and I'm not sure if that's necessarily the case.
Right. Right.
Every parent would want to know if your child,
right,
could be in
maybe. I don't know, for 5% chance, 10% chance, I don't know.
I think it's true even in my
personal
experience with the BRCA gene.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
I think this father would ask himself, well, I want to know if I have this problem.
Right.
I think, and if the answer is yes, I want to know,
then you have to.
Right.
The answer is no. Right. The question is, at the end of the day, the question is, am I responsible to put myself in potential to make myself in a less good position because maybe I might have other kids who are looking for shidduchim for someone else. Is that am I responsible for that? Okay, so let's try to go through the analysis. So the first question is, when is the risk considered marginal? When is the risk considered prevalent? Okay, and this is a question like, when is something called, in halachic term, it's called miut hamatsui, a common enough. Miut means it happens a small amount of times, but matzo, it's common enough that we should be concerned about it. In the context of the kashrus of an unknown bird, there's a comment by the Rivash who says, the first source I have, 50% chance you have to be concerned about something. You know where this comes up a lot? To what extent are we, this is not our topic, it may be a future topic, but you know, something's about checking vegetables for bugs. So if you eat a bug, so that's a Torah prohibition to eat a bug, right? But so we, you know, there are all these processes about checking bugs. Well, what if the likelihood is so remote that there's a bug, you still have to check? Like, there's at what point do we consider that the chances of there being a bug, or like, you know, you have to check, filter the water in New York City because of the concern of bugs. That's a different question about microscopic bugs, but this question comes up as to when do we consider that something is a likely enough occurrence that we should take precautions. So there's a famous Mishkanos Yaakov it's a long piece, it's a very long piece, and in this piece he has one line where he says, that when is something considered a likely possibility? 10%. So the many people quote that when they deal with issues of insect infestation, if they're saying that if there's at least a 10% chance that there are bugs in this, again, entire topic, if there are 10% chance there are bugs in this vegetable, then you would have to check. There's a 1% chance, you don't have to worry about that. And if you ate a bug, you ate a bug. But we don't, when are we concerned about something? So does that apply? So Rav Asher Weiss, this is from his article, from his tshuva, he says, for in reality, he looks at it a little bit different than Mishko Jacob. It's impossible to establish the definition of a prevalent minority in terms of percentages. Rather, whatever occurs frequently and is not an exception or abnormal is considered a prevalent minority. In other words, if something, there's if people generally assume we're worried about this, then you should be worried about this. And he also brings, there's this Taz. And the Taz talks about, he says, it, the Taz says that if there's a finding, he's saying that this has to do with trephos. This has to do with like trephos. Like, when are we concerned if an animal has a certain trepha, if we have to check an animal, don't have to check an animal? And the Taz has this line in Yerodea, Simon Lamadav, Sifkat and Gimel, where he basically says that if there is what's called a re'usa, where there is a finding, let's say there's a presumption that there's never a problem, right? Less than 10%. But there is a finding, there is what's called in halakha terms a re'usa, that let's say that apparently here, this case, the animal in its life was shaking its head. So then we're concerned, and like normally you're allowed to rely on majority that the animal's not a trepha. But if the animal does something which indicates that it's a problem, then we have to be worried about it. Then you have to check the animal. So based on this, Rav Asher Weiss says that if there is, you say, normally speaking, people are generally healthy, but if there is something that rebuts this presumption that people are generally healthy, then we should be concerned about it. And based on this, Rav Asher Weiss says, I know of one heartbreaking case in a distinguished family where one of the family members had this same disorder, and the parents did not test the other children, and one of the children suffered a cardiac arrest in front of his friends in the schoolyard. Therefore, it seems to me that the parents are undoubtedly obligated to test their other children. If the children are already adults, each one is obligated to undergo testing himself. So this is like the easy question. You know, if there's a 50% chance that a sibling, you know, based on if one sibling has this genetic disorder, and there's a 50% chance that sibling's going to have this, like, everyone would agree that this is something that you're absolutely obligated to test for. Yes, Michael?
So in that, though, I was just going to say, 10% is not the answer.
We're not yet about the 10%. Yeah, we're not yet. We're going with the cousins a bit, yeah.
Where is the obligation of the adult to test himself? I understand a parent for a child, but where is the obligation of an adult to test himself?
Probably because, he doesn't say, but it's based upon v'nishmartem oldenav shoseichem, that we have to act reasonably. So that's the question, what's considered reasonable, but that's probably what he would say. What's more complicated is are we concerned, to what extent should you put yourself out, should you inconvenience yourself or cause major inconvenience to you to help someone else? That you would say, okay. You would say maybe you obviously should help yourself. You obviously should do whatever it can to help someone else. To help someone else. There's to unmute someone here. Okay, so there's a Gemara which says the following. Here's an interesting Gemara. In other words, how much should we expose others to a risk? But if there's not for sure, you're not for sure saving the other person's life, right? So you're not for sure. There's a percent chance that maybe something will happen to them. But how much should you expose yourself to risk? You know, how much should you expose others to risk? But you're not necessarily harming. It's a 10% chance maybe. But how much should you impact yourself rather than expose someone to risk? Yeah. What? Oh, you're saying how much should you? You're saying a separate question. What you're saying is, right? There you're putting yourself in risk for that. Yeah. But that's a question of, you know, creating a potential danger to yourself. I'm saying here, this is a case where it's potentially harming a shidduch. So there's no harm to my life. You know, with someone halacha. I don't know if we ever talked about this before, about putting yourself in danger in order to save someone's life. You know, and they're getting made kidney transplant. There's relatively, if you read the tshuvos from the 1960s, so the Minchas Yitzchak said, absolutely, you absolutely cannot donate a kidney. Because in the 1960s, it was very dangerous. So the halacha would not, halacha I don't think obligates people to, but when there's really no risk, or there's minimal risk, lashon is, it's a tremendous mitzvah, a tremendous thing to do. I'm asking a different question. someone you're helping someone else out, but you're impacting yourself. You're shidduchim that you know. Obviously, you're testing yourself. You tested yourself, but people are going to hear, oh, 50%. I don't want to be around this person. I don't want to even go out with this person. So my question is, how much should you negatively impact yourself in order to help someone else? Right? Again, if it's definitely saving their life, fine. But what if it's not definitely saving their life? So there's an interesting Gemara in the Darim Daf Peyam and Beis. You know, this people read this Gemara, and we're not going to talk about this. You know, the whole COVID situation. Like, how much should one, what precautions one should take, impact have on other people. So there's an interesting Gemara here in the Darim Peyam and Beis. It says Mayan Shel Bnei Ha'ir. So you have a spring that belongs to the people of a particular city. My city owns the spring. Let's say I need the spring for my life, for the life of the people of this town, and the life other people could also use the spring. No, if there's only enough water for the people of town A owns the spring, and both town A and town B can benefit from the spring, town A can use the spring. They go first. Right, the spring either can be used by town A's animals or town B's animal. Town A's animals can use it because they own the spring. What about the laundry? Laundry of town A versus laundry of town B. Laundry of town A comes first. What about it's either they need it to drink, and we need it for our laundry. So, that's a question, and I'm missing some of the. If it's a choice, so the lives take precedent. I apologize. I missed an important line here that's not here. Rabbi Yossi argues, and Rabbi Yossi says that. The laundry of town A precedes the water for the lives of town B. And so the question is why? So the Gemara continues, I apologize, I skipped this important line, and he says that of our bubisa demone masya lide sha mumisa, that could be that dirty laundry can lead to melancholy. You know, it's the machlos Rashi and the Rad. Rashi says, "Our bubisa demane." Rashi says, "Shenose begadim she'ena rochzam ad she'shchorim harbe." If you walk around with unlaundered clothing, it can lead to shamumisa, shigaon. It can refer to madness. If you walk around with non-laundered clothing, you don't clean. You go around with non-clean clothing, it can affect your mental health. The Ran writes, "What does it mean that it can lead to?" Melancholy or shumamisa, kishesh begadav arvuvish shel zuama she'en mechavim tami velosham. If your clothes are mixed with filth due to not being regularly washed, right? Veloshim kishem mezuamin mevien lede shimum v'timon lev, leads to melancholy and confusion of the heart. So you got this debate as to can lead to insanity or confusion. If you don't have so Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion. Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion, you have one town that has a spring of water, and they can use it for their clothing, and you have another town, again, I apologize, I'm missing an important source in there, and you have another town that can use it for their, to live. So Rabbi Yossi says, if it's my water, I am not obligated to let the other town use the spring. It's not gonna kill me. If I let them use the spring, but it will make me go mad. It'll make people in the town go mad. It will cause them tsar, or cause them pain. So this is an interesting question, right? In other words, how much are we responsible, right, for someone from another town, right? So Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that you are permissible. You're permitted to endanger the lives of others by not allowing water to reach them, so you do not develop insanity and confusion, even though there's no danger to your life. Yeah?
In any situation, given the fact that it wasn't like this, what if town A had spent money on a public works project to get access to the stream, and town B said, you know what, we're not going to spend the money, we'll just piggyback on town A and use their stream?
It does. I don't. It's a good question. You say, what if someone is negligent? You know, are you obligated to save the life of someone who is being negligent? Basically, you know, they brought it upon themselves. I didn't see anything when it comes to this. I'm not sure. But it's a good point. In other words, to what extent, if you're making life-threatening situation, you try to save people's lives, does it make a difference whether the person caused themselves to be in this life-threatening situation? I don't know. It's a good question. Right. Correct. So I mean, there could be what's unclear from this Gemara, and I'm going to share with you how two different Achronim read this Gemara. That's one factor is the amount of pain or suffering that town A is going to have, and B is, are they really in danger? How much in danger the other town's going to be? Is it really pekuach nefesh or is it not? Like those are both factors are important. So we're going to see how this plays out. There's one other rabbi. I'm bringing you the sources that Rav Asher Weiss brings in going through these his analysis. Then he also brings other Gemara. So he brings this Rambam, and the Rambam says the following. The Rambam says, Haisha, a woman, kozman shehi meinika aspido, as long as she is nursing her son, poksim la b'masiyadeha. Then her workload's reduced. So we provide her for food. This talks about in a mishneh in the early days about the relationship between husband and wife. Who's what jobs a woman should have. So it says here that whatever jobs is that she can, unless she has certain jobs in the house, so she doesn't have to have a job if one of her, you can lessen one of her jobs. Diminish one of her jobs if she's nursing a child. Give her food. And we give her foods that are beneficial for producing milk. So now, they've allocated the right amount of food for her. She wants to eat more. Or, let's say she has this craving for other food, and she wants other food. In those days, right, the women weren't working, so basically the husband would provide the income, the woman would provide certain things, and this way it actually provided protection for the woman who didn't work. But here we're saying the husband had to provide the woman enough food so that for herself, and also so that she can provide milk for her child. Now let's say she has a craving for other food, okay? Otherwise she's gonna not feel good. But it's not necessarily great for her, but it's a craving. So she has enough food, but she has a craving, she wants extra. That she has to find on her own. She has to pay for her own resources. But look what it says. Ve'ein habal yachol la'kev v'lomar, and the husband, though, cannot prevent her and say she im tochal yosar midai, if she eats too much, o tochal machal ra, she eats bad food, yamus havlad, the baby's going to die, ibnei tsar gufa kadum, her pain comes before the potential danger to the child. Again, what's unclear from this Rambam is how much pain is she going through and what's the likelihood of danger to the child. Yeah, Evan? I don't know. I can, after the shiur, I can find out, Evan. It's probably a rivet or something. Yeah, sorry. It's just it comes from Bar Ilan. So, no, she's nursing.
She's nursing.
So my point to you is, here are two sources. I'm just pointing out to you that here are two sources where we consider the fact that I'm not going to die. I can do whatever I want with my stuff, right? Like it's my spring, it's my food, right? I can do what I want to do something that will be beneficial to me, that won't cause me pain, that won't cause me distress, but it could cause, it could be potentially dangerous for people of another town, could be potentially dangerous for the child. And in both instances, we have Rav Yossi, and in other instances, we have the Rambam who allows it. I will tell you that there are different ways to read both of these cases. The Tshuvos Beis Ephraim is, he says that he understands this, that you may take the remote risk of endangering the life of the baby to alleviate your bodily strength. And he said it's similar to, when he quotes this, he said it's similar to the laundry case. And so one could be lenient based on reading these sources to say that you can be lenient not to disclose to the cousins information because it will cause harm to the family. The Tshuvos Beis Shlomo, another achron, says no. Both of these cases are cases where there's not a real danger to the other town. Right, they need the water, but it's not a real danger, and there's not a real danger to the baby. If there's a real danger, and then my anguish is set aside in the face of the other person's danger. So the truth is, whatever answer you want, you could find sources to support either side. Rav Asher Weiss basically says here, it seems to me that the appropriate and correct thing to do is to privately tell the cousins in order to allow them to be tested for the defective gene, if they so wish, and to ask them to keep the matter confidential and thereby to fulfill that which Chazal instructed, that it is prohibited for a person to reveal the secret of his fellow man. That's what really you should do. Now, you should tell the father that he should be strict in some sense, and you should be concerned about the 10% chance because it is enough of a risk. And it's true. It's true. There are those who might say you don't have to, but he thinks that the appropriate thing to do is to tell them and to keep it quiet. The final question we have is, what if the parent does not say anything? What is the doctor's responsibility? So, as was mentioned, the law requires confidentiality between the doctor and the patient to ensure that patients do not refrain from going to doctors due to concern that their physical and emotional problems will become known to the other and become a topic of gossip. In other words, it's important for the system to keep this kind of confidentiality, right? Same time, and also, there could be an obligation of Dina the Machos Adina, you have to follow the law of the land. The question is, do you have a responsibility? Does a doctor have a responsibility? Let's say he's going to lose his job. Is he responsible to lose his job rather than, let's say he believes that, let's say the father doesn't even want to tell the brother. Like that case. The brother of the child. Like, you know, the other child, the 50% chance. Okay, well, let's just say. Does the doctor have a responsibility? 50% chance, that guy saved his life. Ah, but you're violating confidentiality, it's illegal, maybe he's gonna lose his license. Right. So what do you think halachically? You think halachically you're obligated to? Are you required, let's put it this way. If someone says to you, I'm going to fire you. I mean, they can't do it here in America because you can sue them for whatever religious discrimination. Someone threatens to fire you. They say, "Eat this non-kosher food. I'm going to fire you." What's the halacha? You're supposed to get fired. Okay, you know, you're not allowed to violate. You're not allowed to not just Shabbos, but you're not allowed to eat. You're not allowed to eat non-kosher, even if it means that they could be fired. So what would be the responsibility? What's the halachic responsibility? What's it called? What's the halachic responsibility to try to save? If you see someone in danger, so you're supposed to, there's a halachic responsibility to save them, right? What's that called? Yeah? Right. That's good. So he's trying. So he, by the way, he's going to end up, Rav Asher Weiss is going to end up trying to find a way. You're going to see, if you look at the end, you're going to try to find a way. I don't know if that's protected by confidentiality. What? Yes, I'm saying he probably would violate it anyway. Right. So the Torah says lo sabo d'abriacha. So the Torah says that there is a prohibition. There's a lav. There's a prohibition to stand idly by when someone's in danger. If you're able to save someone and you don't, so that you violate a prohibition, right? Right, so you're saying it's 50% chance. Was it 90? You want to wait till it's 90% chance? Okay, so to the, yeah? Right. No, that's not true. That's not true at all. No, it's not true at all. That's not true at all. No, that's not true at all. I think in general, when I teach this in 10th grade. So in general, this is the way I teach it. I teach this in 10th grade. Not that I said when they're in Shidduchim, not in Shidduchim then. But I teach this and we learn, and that's not what the halacha says. Basically, if it's something that nobody would go out with, let's say someone has a violent personality, or someone, let's say, is an apikoris, and it's a frum community, okay? No one would go out with them, then you have a obligation to tell them right away. If it's something, there are tshuvas about this. Let's say someone has diabetes. In case there's tshuva, someone has diabetes, or let's say someone has anger management issues, someone has anxiety or something. When it comes to the post, can make a distinction. Even Rav Moshe is a tshuva about someone. I think a woman who was intimate with someone, and he even paskin there. You don't have to say right away. Now, there could be certain pieces of information that were basically, if nobody would go out with this person, like in your circles. Like violent personality, apikorsis, right? An unknown, you know, like really serious illness. So then you're supposed to tell right away. If it's something that perhaps, you also don't want to prevent shidduchim. So if it's something that perhaps some people would go with, some people would not go out with, or you don't know, whatever. So then it may be lashon hara actually tell right away. But as it goes on, then you can tell later on. It's not a topic, but certainly, no, you obviously have to say. You obviously have to say if something's a very serious situation. So yeah.
And this is not that situation.
Right.
This is you're telling the person who is directly in medical danger.
Right. So you're trying to save the person. And I would say, Rifki, that even if in the cases with the Gemara and the Rambam, Shulchan Aruch talks about trying to save someone, like someone is plotting to harm someone, you don't know if it's going to work or not. So I don't think it's like 100%. These are things where it's likely. Like you're responsible. If you see that someone will likely be harmed, what the level is, we can talk about that. But I think 50%, I think, would fit under that category. So the chasam sofer. I made it again. I wrote it twice. I don't know why I wrote it twice here. So the Chassam Sofer, just look here. The Chassam Sofer, it's based on, that's the first Chassam Sofer here. It's found, the Chassam Sofer is, let me go back. The Chassam Sofer says that, It's not this chelik, give me a second, I apologize. I want to say something else. The first Chassam Sofer is teaching something else. That the law of Dinam Chosidim, you have to follow the law of the land, that applies even when there is a societal need. Now, as you have to follow the law of the land, even when it doesn't involve money, this Chassam Sofer says, he's talking about a case, I didn't break the English here, where basically, if they made a law and for the benefit of society, even if there's no financial implication, you still have to follow the law of the land. But what I'm talking about now is do you have to lose money, do you have to lose your job if in order to inform on someone? In other words, does the doctor have to lose his job if he believes that, I have to tell this person, 50% chance he's gonna be affected by this. Do I have a doctor have a responsibility to do that if it's going to cost me my job? So the answer is no. Doctors don't have to. Halachically, the answer is halachically no. Um, there is a Ramah which says that when it comes to mitzvos asay, let me make this point first. The Ramah writes, when it comes to a mitzvah asay, this is an Or Chaim, Tafresh Nunvav Sifav, it's talking about spending money on an esrog. He says, don't spend more than 20%. If you want to spend a lot of money on mitzvah asay, you don't want to spend so much money that you're going to become poor. Don't spend more than 20% on mitzvos, positive mitzvos. But on negative mitzvos, you have to be willing to lose all your money rather than violate negative. Rather than if someone tells you eat non-kosher, I'm going to fire you from your job. So you have to lose your job rather than eat non-kosher. So the question is, when the Torah says lo samon adam reyecha, don't stand idly by the blood of your friend, by not saving them. So do you have to lose your job, basically, in order to save this person? The answer. This Ar Chasam Sofer commentary is no, you don't. Because he points out that the distinction is not between a mitzvah sase and a mitzvah lo sase. It's actually between a positive act and a negative act. What do I mean by that? Normally speaking, the Torah says don't do this, you violate it by doing it. The prohibition of lo samon adam reyecha, you violate by what? Not doing it. Right? When it's formulated as a no. It says, don't stand idly by when someone's in danger. If someone's drowning in the sea and you can jump in and save them, so don't stand idly by, but rather do the action and save them. So meaning what? Meaning the Chasam Sofer says that the obligation to lose your job only applies where someone tells you to perform an action which is forbidden. But you never have to perform an action that will cost you your job. So technically speaking, if the parent does not tell his children or does not tell the cousins about this diagnosis, the doctor is not halachically obligated to do so. If by doing so, this could cost him, could cost him his job. He doesn't have to. So rather, Moshe Weiss, he says the following. If you look here, this is what he writes here. He says, however, if the doctor is concerned, I think I wrote it both. No. Look at this, the second to last page. I messed up the order a little bit here. He says, however, if the doctor is concerned that he would cause himself damage and expose himself to legal action, he is not obligated to endanger his livelihood. I think for this reason, that again, this it's true, it's a law, it's a prohibition, but it's a prohibition that's violated by not acting. And so he's following what the Chasam Sofer says, that when we say that you have to lose all your money rather than violate law, means you have to lose all your money rather than commit a sin by acting. And he says, as such, as some of you suggested here, the most advised course of action here is for the doctor to arrange for the cousins to be tested without revealing the existence of the young man's condition. He should find some other pretext to explain why he's concerned about them and why he is advising that they be tested. If it is not possible to employ such a strategy, he should tell them that someone in the broader family is a carrier of the gene, which may cause cardiac issues, without revealing who within the family was found to be the carrier or which branch of the family he is from. I wonder if that gets him out of the confidentiality rulings, but that's what Rav Asher Weiss. So Rav Asher Weiss is in favor of disclosure, but he is aware of the sensitivity of this when it comes to the doctor. Don't endanger your livelihood, try not to violate the law, and you should find a way to get it done. At the very least, try to employ a strategy if you can't get them to be tested without divulging this information that would compromise your parnasa.